This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show. Today, we're going to have a really, really good show, and we're going to be focusing on veteran issues. Me, myself, having served in the Marine Corps and being a veteran myself, veteran issues are very, very important. And we've got to make sure that we take care of those who have served, and especially those recent vets who have paid the debts and all vets who have paid that debt of service to us. But we have on the phone with us Tom Tarantino. He's the Chief Policy Officer of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. And they are dealing with a number of different issues that we're going to talk about today. Everything from the new GI Bill to employment of veterans to health care of veterans to even dealing with military families. Tom, thanks so much for coming by Fed Access.
Thanks for having me, Derek.
You know, talk to us about, and you guys have had a lot of media recently, and that's where I've seen you guys. I saw that pretty cool ad that you had from the Ad Council as well, the loan ad, and I've been meaning to talk to you, so I'm glad to have you on the show. But talk to us about what IAVA is about. What do you do? You know, how do you join? How do you get involved in this dynamic, and what do you guys got going on?
Well, IAVA is the first and largest nonpartisan, nonprofit, non-ideological organization built to support veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan and their families. We have a very simple mission. It's to improve the lives of veterans and their families. What we do is we try to help bridge that military-civilian divide through advocacy, making sure that veterans are taken care of when they come home, that their benefits are squared away, that they're actually not ignored by policymakers, by awareness, by enlisting the other 99% of Americans who did not serve in Iraq and Afghanistan, and getting them to understand that these issues affect their lives because they affect their neighbors and their families and you know, those of us who have served, and also assistance.
Right.
You know, we try to help reach out and get our members and all veterans help with their benefits, whether it's us doing it directly or we do it with other partners in the VSO, and the Veterans Service Community that are best in class. And IAVA has, for example, the only website where you can calculate your GI Bill benefits, and that's newgibill.org. It's the only place where you can really get one-to-one customer service about the post-9/11 GI Bill. The VA doesn't have it. No one else really has it. So it's trying to figure out how do you deliver services and support to an extremely small population around the country and make sure that they're not ignored by the civilian population and make sure that their needs are met when they come home from war.
How does a person get involved? I mean, you know, have membership and everything else, and I know you served in the Army, and you're one of those people who served and now are giving back in this way, and thank you for your service. But how does somebody get involved in IAVA?
Well, the first step is go to IAVA.org.
Okay.
And you can sign up as either a veteran member or a supporter. And there you can find out about the things we're doing in Washington. You can
any
find
cost
out about,
for that? Is there any cost to do that?
No, absolutely not. You paid your dues in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's the way we felt about it. This is a generation that is slightly different. We, because of the prevalence of technology, define community differently. Our community is based on our access to information and our common interests. You know, I can keep track of, you know, guys that I served with who live on the other side of the country, and we can almost talk, it's possible to talk daily as if we were still hanging around each other.
Right.
So we're trying to figure out ways to make sure that we can reach out to this generation, deliver them, you know, the services that they need in the medium they're accustomed to communicating in. So IAVA.org is really the hub. And from there, you can find out what events are happening in your area, whether it's, you know, we got veterans going to a baseball game, whether there's local services. You can find out what resources are available in your area. And if you are an actual deployed vet of Iraq and Afghanistan, you can join Community of Veterans. It's like a Facebook for combat veterans only, and it's a private community. You have to actually send in your DD-214 to get access. So everyone in that community has seen combat, has been there, has deployed, and it's a safe space where veterans can talk to veterans about issues that they wouldn't be comfortable talking to civilians about.
Sure. If you've got veterans from other generations and who mm-hmm. have served in other conflict zones and everything else, can they also become a part of this? I mean, if they they hear IAVA and they say, well, listen, I didn't serve in Iraq, Afghanistan, but I'm still here supporting you guys.
No, absolutely. I mean, you can join as a supporter, and mm-hmm. There's really, there's a slight difference in terms of access, but the reality is that if we don't enlist non-veterans mm-hmm. to care about veterans issues, mm-hmm. nothing will ever get done.
Right.
Second of all, we owe a tremendous debt to the veterans of previous conflicts. I think, this one of the reasons this organization was started was because a Vietnam veteran went to my boss after he got back from Iraq and mm-hmm. said, it's time to keep serving.
Mm-hmm.
And, the chairman of our board is a Vietnam vet. And
okay.
The Vietnam generation that actually really showed us how to take care of our own.
Right.
And so they're tremendous partners and mentors for us.
Outstanding. You mentioned something really incredible, what you just said about some of the things that you guys are providing that the VA is not providing. Why is that, Tom? You say that you got the calculator on there, you've got the explanation about the GI Bill, and most people think you want to go to va.gov and get these things, but what's the disconnect, do you think, that is coming from where you're saying, listen, we're seeing that we need to provide these unique solutions, but the VA is not doing it?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I think there's just that this sort of old traditional argument of slower government versus mm-hmm. Faster nonprofit or private sector.
Okay.
Sometimes it takes a little while for the government, and the government also has a lot more restrictions on what they can do. In terms of the VA specifically, though, the VA has been a very passive, very insular organization, for the last 40 years. And while, the VA is undergoing a very significant internal transformation, it's going to take a while to see that. But the VA, for example, just doesn't know how to do outreach very well.
Hmm.
It doesn't know how to communicate with its customers in a way they relate to the world. They're getting much better at this.
Right.
The VA's social media presence has become far better over the last 2 or 3 years than it ever has in my lifetime.
Well, I was about to say, they're probably not doing the same dynamic of being out there on the social media like if they're just getting that up, 2 years ago, then they're kind of well behind, I should say,
right.
A lot of other organizations.
Yeah, no, they are, but they're getting there.
Okay.
And then there is an active effort to really try to modernize the VA. The fact is, though, is that the VA structures in terms of benefits delivery, in terms of systems that we use to actually process veterans' paperwork, mm-hmm. were obsolete years before most Iraq and Afghanistan veterans were even born.
Mm.
So we are, we're not 2 to 3 years behind the power curve. We're 20 to 30 years, even 40 years behind the power curve in terms of doing things like delivering modern health care, delivering modern benefits, making sure things are paperless and swift and error-free.
Right. Are you guys working, with this and being a group that represents this new generation of veterans? Are you working directly with the VA and having conversations and even, when you're providing these solutions and saying, listen, we've been able to do this and we can maybe help you guys do this. Is that conversation starting to take place a little bit more now?
It's actually been taking place a little bit less as of lately. I have spent, countless meetings with various VA outreach organizations trying to help them reach out to Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. We do that a lot on the more local level.
Okay.
But for example, the Secretary of the VA hasn't met with IAVA in over 1,600 days.
Hmm.
Because, frankly, we're nonpartisan. We're
okay.
not ideological.
Right.
If you're supporting vets and you're doing good things, we support you.
Okay.
When you screw up, we're going to call you out on it. That's
sure.
part of what our membership expects. Is not only are we advocates, but we're also watchdogs.
Right.
And that's part of a responsibility we have. And, the VA sometimes gets a little bit testy about that. And that is understandable. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that we can't work together and can't, even on things that we disagree on, we
right.
can't be, we don't have to be disagreeable.
Right. And with all of that, it's not a matter that you're saying that, we don't want to meet. You say, listen, we want to meet, but then sometimes they can be a little bit standoffish in terms of the relationship.
I think we have reached out several times a year to try to set up meetings, and if that's just not a priority for them, that's fine.
Right.
But, you know, we're going to keep pushing ahead. We're going to keep calling it like we see it. And you know, we're going to keep trying to support, you know, the good work that the VA does. You know,
right.
the work that they're doing, you know, modernizing, the work that they do in healthcare is actually good. Now, there's been some problems with their mental health care delivery, and we want to be able to help, you know, figure out where the roadblocks are. And in terms of my particular little sandbox, figure out what are the policy things that I can help.
Right.
Because ultimately, you know, we all have the same mission.
Exactly.
And so even on things that we disagree on, we can still work together and actually make lives better for veterans.
I'm going to take a quick break, Tom. When we come back, I want to talk about this GI Bill and what's going on with it and the work you guys are doing. We're talking to Tom Tarantino. He's the Chief Policy Officer for the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. You can find their site at IAVA.org, IAVA.org. You can become a member. It's free to join. You can become a member and start kind of getting involved in their programs. If you support the veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan, support all veterans, maybe a good organization to become involved in. We'll be right back after this break. We're going to talk about a number of different issues about the veterans and what's going on. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been having an interesting conversation about veteran issues, and we're going to get into a dynamic of what's happening with this GI Bill and employment for veterans and health care for veterans and how military families have been coping over this last 10 years of war. But we're talking to Tom Tarantino. He's the Chief Policy Officer of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. There's a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization who's supporting all the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. You can get involved. You can find them at IAVA.org. Tom, you know, this GI Bill and you know, the when I was in the Marine Corps, we had the Montgomery GI Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And now they had the GI Bill where almost like World War II, where you can get that 100% tuition paid, which is a great benefit for a lot of different veterans. In that, we're starting to see some concerns, some abuses possibly of maybe educational institutions and things like that. You're trying to protect some of these things. What are your concerns with the GI Bill?
Well, I mean, first of all, the GI Bill is the most significant investment in veterans and their families since World War II. And it's absolutely a critical program, not just to help people readjust back to civilian life, but also to get them the job training they need. And never is that more important than it is now. What we are seeing is that a significant number, about a third of the GI Bill, is going to an education sector that isn't really providing the return that it promised.
Hmm.
There are for-profit colleges that are overly expensive. Their degrees typically don't have the accreditation that's advertised. Very few people actually ever graduate. Virtually all that go to these schools wind up with a huge amount of debt. I think it's about 96% of all for-profit school students do have to take out some sort of student loan.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have to include a lot of veterans, because the GI Bill is only going to cover $17,500 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it typically costs about $30,000 to get an associate's degree at these schools.
Mm-hmm.
For those who actually do graduate, they find out that degrees don't qualify for them for the jobs that they thought they did.
Hmm.
And you know, what's important here is to understand that the for-profit schools by themselves aren't bad. The problem is that there's the regulations that regulate these schools are so lax, and there are so many loopholes, that the motive for them to poach veterans' benefits is just too high.
Right. Right, right. You know, with that being said, I mean, as we look at it, what needs to be done? Do we need to educate veterans about these schools better to say, listen, this is a checklist of things you need to start taking a look at? Is the school accredited? Is it this, that, and the other? You know, do we you know, start encouraging veterans to move back more to the traditional colleges that are out there, that are definitely, whether it be a state school or, you know, other schools that have been around for a longer time? I mean, what are you thinking?
You know, I think the first step is we got to make sure that a veteran or their family member can use the GI Bill to meet whatever education and job training needs they might have.
Okay.
Whether that's going to a for-profit school. You know, my sister went to a for-profit school, actually got an excellent education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are very good for-profit schools that provide technical degrees that you're not going to get in the public school system.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to make sure that, you know, if a degree from the University of Phoenix is actually what you need, to get the job you want to get or to continue working where you want to work, then that's fine. The problem is that there is no transparency. I can pull up my computer or my cell phone, find out how much every piece of sushi costs within the city of D.C., but there is nothing to compare metrics of student success in colleges based on the types of programs I want to get. So, right. So transparency is the first thing.
Okay.
The second thing is we actually do have to fix some of the regulatory loopholes. There is something called the 90-10 rule. And what it does is it was a method to originally protect veterans after World War II, but it's a method to allow the free market to regulate these schools. These schools, almost all of their funding comes from tax dollars. And so there is a law that says, you know what, 10% of your funding, 10% of your revenue has to come from people who actually want to buy your product.
So they're feeding off of people almost. I mean,
In terms of the GI Bill, because of a loophole, the GI Bill is considered private, not tax dollars.
Okay.
So that means for every veteran they recruit, that's 9 more students on financial aid, totaling about $125,000 in revenue per veteran. And so what it does is it creates this huge marketing and recruiting machine. So where tax dollars that people are paying to get educated are not going into education. They're going into these huge marketing and recruiting machines so that they can just get more people to get more federal tax dollars and to increase the profit margin.
Right. And you've seen, how we talk about predatory lending, have you seen kind of, predatory, dynamics in terms of this marketing to really get veterans and sell them this bill of goods, and it's not really what they think, it's not thought they were getting into?
Yeah, it's actually very similar.
Okay.
And the Senate Help Committee just released a report that outlines a lot of these tactics, and I've had several friends do this. If you put your name on a website looking for information from a for-profit school, you will be subjected to phone calls at all hours of the day and night. I think one of my buddies got like 40 phone calls in a 3-day period.
Okay.
You will get hundreds of emails into your inbox. High-pressure salespeople who are trained, and I've seen the training materials, to exploit people's pains. They ask you about your pain. They ask you about things you've done in your life, and they try to exploit that and make you believe that getting a degree from ITT Tech, for example, is the answer to solving your problem. What they don't tell you is that most people will never get that degree,
right.
But they will take on a huge amount of student debt that goes right into the for-profit school's pocket that they will spend most of their life trying to pay off.
Right. And these veterans, because, they're looking for that new hope. I mean, they're coming back from war. They're looking, they're kind of in that hopeful stage of like, the next stage of my life, especially are we seeing it happen with the younger vets? I mean, are we seeing it, for those who maybe went into the military at 18 and now they're getting out at 22 or whatever age and they've been in the military for all their lives? Is that who we see, who we're seeing, who this is happening more than maybe somebody who's a little bit more experienced, or where are we seeing it coming from?
No, I mean, I think we're seeing it across the board.
Okay.
I mean, the difference is that, you leave the military at various stages the difference between a veteran and someone who's going to college at 18 is that, you're going to college at 18, you're trying to figure out what you want to do, you're trying to figure out who you are, you're trying to figure out what your life priorities are. Veterans, when they go to college, because of the nature of the GI Bill and the nature of serving in the military, you know who you are. Mm-hmm. Getting shot at has this really amazing ability to focus your life goals very, very quickly.
That's true.
When you use the GI Bill, you have to have a plan. So student veterans tend to be more focused. They tend to have a bit more of a plan. They tend to say, okay, I want to go and get X, Y, and Z so I can get this job. The problem is that there's not enough information to figure out what the right X, Y, and Z are to be able to get the job they want. And often what happens, especially in the for-profit school sector, is that they're told that they will be qualified, or they're told that, oh, well, we don't have the right accreditation now, but by the time you graduate, we will, so you'll be able to get a job in this sector. And I have personally heard at least a half dozen stories just like that.
Wow.
And the numbers across the country are panning that out.
And this leads right into the dynamic of the employment, for veterans, because, they're coming out with technically a whole bunch of debt. They're coming out of with a situation where either they got a degree that's not worth anything or they didn't get the degree.
Right.
And then it leaves them spiraling. It's kind of a spiraling out of control where you may be dealing with health issues or, whether it be PTSD or whatever the case is. And you start saying, I served my country and now I'm left in this bad shape after all this time.
And this is where this starts getting scary.
Okay.
you know, first of all, the unemployment rate for veterans it's been getting better, but it is still too high, and it's remained too high. And so the GI Bill is one of the best remedies to get in, you know, career training. And if the career training isn't worth it, then it's not doing what it's supposed to do. And this is where we start getting very concerned. As this fight over the budget and the deficit gets worse, and it is going to get a lot bloodier, things that we think are untouchable will start being touchable. If you know, it is not a huge leap of logic, because we have already started to see whispers of this. If in Congress the GI Bill is not producing a return on the investment, because it's an expensive investment, but I would argue a necessary and a good one. But if it is not producing the return, if a third or more of the GI Bill continues to go down this rabbit hole and into the pockets of people who run for-profit schools and not producing degrees and you know, employable veterans, then it's going to start looking a lot more attractive for people who are looking to cut.
Right. Right.
And that is unacceptable.
Right. You know, I want you to hold that point real quick, Tom, because what I want to come back and talk about is, what should people, I know you're working on it because you're dealing with the policy dynamic, but what are maybe the several steps that you want veterans and even with your organization, maybe other people, to really get involved in, and maybe hopefully, turn the tide and change this terrible situation. I want to talk about that when we come back. We're talking to Tom Tarantino. He's the Chief Policy Officer of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. They're a nonprofit and nonpartisan organization. You can find their information at IAVA.org. We're talking about veteran issues, the GI Bill, employment of veterans, health care of veterans, and military families. We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we are talking about veteran issues today. And we're talking about this with Tom Tarantino. He's the Chief Policy Officer at an organization that's relatively, I shouldn't say new. Tom, how long you guys been around?
IAV? Since 2004.
Since 2004. So you guys are not necessarily new. Well, kind of the new kids on the block, but you got a little experience behind your belt now. The Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. You can find the information at IAVA.org. Tom is the Chief Policy Officer for IAVA. We were talking about the GI Bill. Tom, we mentioned about the concerns about, you know, what's happening with these private education schools, and how some of them, not all of them, but how there are some of them without question who are predatory and trying to get veterans to use that GI Bill money, and they're not giving them the quality education or they're not even giving them a full degree sometimes that they need in order to succeed. What should we be doing right now? I mean, given that we know the concern, and we also would know that if this thing is maybe not dealt with the right way, that we've got members of Congress and, you know, especially with, like you said, the budget tightening, that they may say, hey, listen, well, you know, we don't need to have a GI Bill like this anymore. We don't need to put all this money back in, you know, and especially, you know, 5 years from now. And I can see it, Tom, maybe you can see it 5 years from now when the war is no longer, you know, really in our sights anymore. And it's already becoming that way. We don't really talk about Afghanistan or talk about those things anymore. When we're a few years away from it even more, then this could, you know, kind of have that tide start turning that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big fear. And you know, there are things we can do right now. First of all, you know, you can go to defendthegibill.org and you can learn about the issue. This is actually a pretty complicated issue, and there's a lot of moving pieces to it. But you can get educated about the issue. If you've been scammed by a for-profit school, or if you feel that you have been treated poorly, you can go and you can tell us your story. Or you can call your congressman and you can tell them to support various pieces of legislation. You know, this is interesting, because this is a very big bipartisan issue. You know, we have bills both in the House and the Senate written by Republicans and Democrats to help transparency and consumer education. It's absolutely nuts to me that we don't have a tool to accurately compare colleges. There's bipartisan legislation in the House and the Senate to help close the loopholes. The problem is that we're having trouble jogging a lot of this stuff loose, and I think it's largely because, you know, the for-profit school industry has donated over $3 million into the campaign coffers of people running for Congress. And it's disturbing that an issue that, when I sit down one-to-one with lawmakers and I explain to them something like the 90-10 rule, which we talked about in the last segment, they look at me like I'm crazy, because it doesn't make any sense. The GI Bill not being counted as tax dollars. It's obviously tax dollars. And yet, it's hard to get those loopholes changed because the for-profit school industry has so much money to lobby and to fight against sensible regulation. Because what you're doing is essentially, you know, they keep saying it's gonna close down for-profit schools. It's not gonna close down for-profit schools. It means their profit margin will go from many hundreds of millions to maybe a couple hundred million.
And these for-profit schools have been operating before the GI Bill came around. So,
right.
I mean, you know, that's a ludicrous
right.
argument.
Right.
You know, and with all of this, do you see, and I don't know how many members of Congress have served in the military as of late, and I know the numbers have been going down, but is that also a concern that some people are starting to take their eyes off of the veteran issues?
Yeah, I think that's actually, I think that's a concern nationally, not
okay.
just with lawmakers.
Okay.
I mean, you know, we just had, you know, a helicopter crash this morning, just put Afghanistan
right. yeah.
back. Shouldn't take
yeah.
the death of seven service members
right.
and a tragedy like that to put the fact that we're at war in the headlines.
Right.
You know, we just saw that the suicide numbers from the Department of Defense, you know, 38 soldiers from the United States Army took their own life.
Right.
Last month.
Right.
That's staggering. I don't have words
ridiculous.
To accurately convey
yeah.
how staggering that
right.
is. And so we have serious issues with the military, and yet most people don't get it because less than 1% have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and around 6% or less have ever seen the inside of a uniform, and that number is shrinking.
Right, 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 right. You know, with that, and do you think that people, and you know, and you kind of get a sense of it more than anybody else. Do you think that people are starting to get tired of hearing about the veterans issues? I mean, what's going on? Is where people are just where we're taking our eyes off it? People, is it, you know, they're tired of hearing about it? You know, we've dealt with it, the war too long. I mean, what is it?
I think there's definitely a bit of war fatigue in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we've seen large number of statistics of people who are against the war, but you know. My argument is, look, you bring everyone home tomorrow or 5 years from now, you're still going to have 2.5 million or right now 2.4 million men and women who need their GI Bill protected,
mm-hmm.
who need to get disability benefits in less than a year, who need to actually be able to see mental health counselors in a reasonable amount of time.
Right.
And so those issues are important. What we've seen is that even though support for the war has gone up and down, support for the warrior has remained high.
Good.
And that's incredibly important. Now, the problem is that so few people have a connection to the military that they don't understand the issues. And
right.
and those who do, we try to do something about it. And it's very, very frustrating to continually, try to educate and re-educate the American people on these issues. But, you know, we do it because, you know, I was a soldier and
right.
I don't know how to do anything else. So.
Right. You know, it leads me to think about the employment of veterans. And, you know, we talk about this GI Bill, which is so critical. And I do agree with you that we need to make sure this thing is saved. And we need to have that benefit, you know, especially for those who are coming out of any kind of war situation. We need to make sure that they are OK. And with all of that, the employment of veterans. What are we seeing? I know the numbers are getting better, but are we still seeing that a lot of veterans are coming back home and they're not able to find the jobs?
What we're seeing is that, you know, veterans are leaving and they're entering an employment community, a civilian employment community that's largely never served in the military.
Hmm.
This is the first generation where business leaders have, by and large, not served in the military. You know, the Vietnam generation is smaller than the World War II generation, and they're actually either now at the upper echelons of business or they're retiring. And so we're starting to see this huge gap in terms of what people perceive military service to be and what people understand military service to be. So, we just released a study with Prudential that we conducted earlier this year.
Okay.
And really, it wasn't necessarily a snapshot of, you know, how many veterans are unemployed. What we wanted to find out was, why are veterans unemployed? Why are they having a hard time to find jobs?
And what did you find out?
What we found out is that the civilian workforce doesn't understand military service. And
okay.
there is nothing. We have never done anything as a country. We have never built a tool to help them understand it. They want to understand it. They want to hire veterans, but they don't have anything that gives them any sort of qualitative or quantitative analysis of what military schools and training and skills mean.
You know, Tom, and I found that, and maybe I don't know if you found this as well, but that military skills translator just doesn't do it. A lot of times, you know, I mean, sometimes how, you know, the translate, it tries to translate things into civilian jobs, or it'll translate, you know, it allows maybe a civilian to see, well, what, you know, what is this equivalent to? And, you know, I know you served in Cal, I served in the infantry. A lot of times, and even in those dynamics, they'll, you know, they'll automatically say infantry is, you know, security guard or this, that, and the other. But I mean, in that work, you do so much more.
This has been the problem, is that, you know, we've built translators, but they're not built on any real data.
Right.
It's all just anecdotal or kind of what we think we know. We have never done, you know what, if you're a medic or a corpsman, you get out of the military, in most states, you're not even qualified to drive an ambulance.
That's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous. It's because we've never done an actual study on the gaps and overlaps of what military training and experience means in the civilian world.
And these guys are more qualified than probably most people who are out there, because they've seen the actual, you know, they've seen the real deal.
I would argue, but I don't know that, because I don't have any data. And so what we did last year was work with both the House and the Senate. And, you know, I think, you know, Congressman Miller and Senator Murray really both and their staff stepped up and put a tremendous amount of work into something called the Vow to Hire Heroes Act. And what that's going to do is it's actually going to study how skills translate. It's going to take a little while, but we're actually going to go back and do the math.
Okay.
It's going to make sure that transition assistance is mandatory and that there's additional training and retraining benefits for veterans who may actually have gaps in their skill sets and need to go back to school.
Right. Do you think the military is on board? I mean, you know, are we seeing that Department of Defense is now, you know, I mean, because Department of Defense is its own beast. And, you know, if they push hard, then they can start making some things happen. Is the military on board with this to kind of say, listen, we need to really be a lot more partners with the private sector so that, you know, what you're doing in the military, and then when you jump out, there is no disconnect?
Yeah, I think the DOD is getting on board. I mean, they understand this is a problem.
Okay.
You know, because people in the DOD, you know, they're service members too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one wants to see their soldiers having problems.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, they're looking at that. And one of the things that we actually found, the other thing that we found in our study is that, you know, service members have, they don't have a very accurate expectation of what the civilian workforce is like.
Mm.
And so, you know, what that tells me is that we have to do a better job training service members to be civilians.
Right.
So we have to update transition assistance, which is actually happening. We have to let people know that, look, you know, being in the military isn't a job. It's a profound life commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are just a lot of things that are taken care of in the military that aren't taken care of in the civilian world. And you know, a lot of veterans that we surveyed, you know, they always say, look, I'm looking for a job that gives me meaning.
Right.
You know, and that's what's the same. When I got out of the military, I wasn't just looking for a paycheck. I was looking for a mission.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of times you join because you join because you wanted to serve and you had a sense of purpose, a sense of passion about country and a certain level of dedication. And you want that in your career.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, I've always thought, and we got to take a break in a second. I've always thought that it would be so beneficial that, you know, in boot camp, you go through and you're taught how to wear your uniform. And I know, in the Marine Corps, we took tremendous pride in terms of, you know, our uniforms and everything, and all services do. But, you know, I've always thought it would be beneficial that along with boot camp, maybe you're also taught about how to buy a suit. You know, maybe also that, you know, it's not something that you wait until it's time to get out, that you begin, because our warriors should also start integrating a little bit more with the private sector, you know, even before you jump out of the military. I've just always thought that might be a good policy.
Well, it's good that you mentioned. You just reminded me there's actually parts of the Vow to Hire Heroes Act to do that.
Okay.
To allow people as they're separating from the military to go into internships and fellowships.
Good.
Use their terminal leave time to actually get some practical work experience before they have to fully integrate into the civilian world. And I think this is part of a larger movement. To not just, you know, training warriors is great, but you have to train the total package. And I think that's something that the military is really getting. You got to train someone to be a warrior, going back to be a citizen and back to being a warrior. And so we have to think more holistically about how we do things like employment training, mental health, you know, skills training. Because the reality is, especially with the way we use the Guard and Reserve, you're going to go from being warrior to civilian a couple times during any conflict.
Right. Exactly. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to keep on talking to Tom Tarantino. He's the Chief Policy Officer of IAVA. They are the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. They're a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that focuses in on veteran issues, especially the Iraq and Afghanistan veteran issues. We've been talking about the GI Bill, employment. We're going to go into health care when we come back and talk about what's going on in terms of healthcare and veterans and how we can maybe deal with some of these issues. We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we have been talking about veteran issues today. And we've been talking about especially what's going on with Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. We're talking to the organization, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. And we're talking to their chief policy officer, Tom Tarantino. And he's been discussing with us a number of different issues, the GI Bill, employment. And Tom, I wanted to talk about health care. I mean, you mentioned a couple of things in a couple earlier segments is about suicide rate in veterans and the health care maybe getting a little bit better for veterans, but it's still not perfect, still not, you know, where it needs to be. What are you seeing and what issues are you guys focused on?
Well, I mean, right now, the mental health care piece is huge. You know, the Army just released, 38 suicides in the month of July. They just released that an hour ago. And, I mean, that's staggering. I'm kind of at a loss for words to describe how I feel about that.
Right.
What that says is that, you know, we are not training people how to understand mental health and invisible injuries very well. You know, we, as an officer and as a soldier, you're trained on how to use your weapon system. You're trained on how to condition your body.
Mm-hmm.
They don't train you on how to condition your mind. And they don't train junior leaders on how to recognize these issues early on. And the real tragedy is things like post-traumatic stress disorder are actually highly treatable if you catch it, especially if you catch it early on.
Right.
And
right.
Before it becomes post-traumatic stress disorder, you can catch, you know, guys who are having issues and help them out. And I think this is something that the military is now starting to get their arms around. You know, it's great that General Ordiano gets it. It's great that Admiral Mullen and General Dempsey and all these kind of these great general and flag officers that we've had over the last few years get it. But until that sergeant and that lieutenant and that captain get it,
right,
we're not going to make a lot of headway. And the reality is that we came to this fight both in the DOD and the VA way too late.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't until around 2008, 2007 that we even started talking about these issues. And it wasn't until 2008, 2009 that we actually really started doing something about these issues. And by that time, the war had been going on for, you know, 5 years in Iraq and you know, 7 years in Afghanistan.
You know, you mentioned something really, really powerful, and you're right. I mean, the higher and the upper echelon can get it and talk about it, and we can make these great speeches about it. But until it actually goes into the actual ranks, because that's where it really hits. You know, that's where they say the rubber hits the road. That's where the real impact happens, because, you know, it's your platoon sergeant, your squad leader, your company commander, who's really going to make that difference in terms of making sure that their troops, you know, go see a counselor or go see that person. Mm-hmm. Do you, you know, and you're closer to it than I am. Do you think that we're seeing that now a little bit more and more with it getting down to the ranks?
I think we're better off than we were even, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. But it's going to take a long time. What we're talking about is profound cultural shift.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about a profound cultural shift 5 to 7 years into the war. And it's going to take a while. But, like, we've seen progress there. Now everyone who comes home from Iraq and Afghanistan gets screened for mental health injuries. You know, now we are starting to see a lot higher level of awareness at that ground level. But we have to understand that this is a long-term fight. This is a long-term cultural change. And even when we bring home people from Afghanistan, this is a fight we're still going to have to be fighting, not necessarily in the military, but also in the VA. You know, the VA, what's interesting is that VA healthcare tends to be, and by most professional metrics, the single best healthcare system in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I use it. It's my primary healthcare provider, and I love it. It's great. But in terms of their mental health care, they're lagging behind. You know, the IG released a report earlier this year that said that, you know, the VA said that everyone gets seen for mental health care, you know, within 14 days, but not by a rate of 98%. Well, what they found out, that actually wasn't true. So that about half the people actually miss that two-week guideline, and about 50% of those wait 50 to 60 days.
Sure.
And so not only are we not adequately taking care of mental health care in the VA structure, but we don't even, you know, the VA doesn't even have an accurate assessment of how well or how badly they're doing.
And it's always amazing to me when you hear what an agency is saying, like the VA is saying. They'll say something and they'll say, hey, listen, you know, things are getting a lot better. Then we talk to some veterans and then you hear a complete different story. It seems to be a very, very big disconnect there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, you know, a lot of that is, you know, the transforming that VA from being that sort of obsolete passive organization to something that's more dynamic and that reaches out. You know, whenever I hear, you know, the secretary talk about, you know, when he's talking about veterans who have committed suicide, and he'll say, well, you know, this guy, you know, had he come to us, we would have been able to help him. Well, my you know, yes, that's probably true, but my question to him was, why weren't you going to him?
Right.
Like,
right.
Why is the VA standing there waiting for us to show up?
Right. Right.
And that's not just a physical shift. That's a major cultural shift. And I think the senior leadership in the VA really gets that, but it is the second largest government agency. It's going to take a long time to profoundly shift that. And again, they came way too late to the game.
And are you concerned that, you know, again, as we take our eyes off the veteran issues, and, you know, just like you mentioned, it seems as if the only way Afghanistan gets mentioned is if death happens,
mm-hmm.
And which is unfortunate. Do you think, you know, down the road?
Yeah, I'm scared to death.
Okay.
Because what I'm worried about is going to happen is that people are going to come home from Afghanistan, which is great. But then everyone's going to think, great, let's close the books on this. And they're going to think, well, we don't need to keep funding the VA. Well, actually, you need to fund the VA a lot more.
Right.
Because now what's happening is all these guys are going to be switching from DOD to VA. And traditionally, what we have done is when the conflict's over, we pare down the military and we start cutting the VA.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't need to worry about this anymore because the war is over. Well, right. You know what? This is a lifetime commitment you make to someone who joins, that the government makes to someone who joins the military.
Right. Right.
And we have to make sure that, you know, regardless of how you feel about the war, it doesn't matter. What matters, and I think ultimately success or victory in Iraq and Afghanistan is going to historically be measured by how we treat this generation of veterans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 'Cause how we treat this generation of veterans impacts the next recruitment of the next generation of veterans.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Tom, thank you so much. We've run out of time, but I want to keep this conversation going. I definitely want to have you back, and let's continue to talk about, you know, these veterans. There's so many things that we didn't get a chance to talk about. Next time, you know, military families and other things you guys are focused in on, but let's keep this conversation going. Thank you so much for coming on Fed Access.
Thanks for having me, Derek.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.